You do the intro.
Hello and welcome to the Socially Intoxicated Awareness Podcast, or SoToxiPod. We are here today to give a genuine race reaction after we had a exciting F1 race this afternoon. But before we dive into that, how are you today, Toby?
I'm fine. Currently in a bit of a predicament. I'm recording from university, from work, and it turns out I might be slightly locked in here. But we'll figure that out as the night progresses. Also, I got shat on by the same bird twice yesterday, which I thought was maybe worth mentioning.
How were you able to see that it was the same bird twice?
It might have been a bird. Maybe the bird changed in between, but I looked up and there was a bird sitting there. And then I looked up the second time and there was a bird that looked strikingly like the previous bird still sitting there.
Amazing. So you were sitting on a bench or standing under the same pole and wow.
Yeah, and it was like 10, 15 minutes apart.
What a day. Yeah.
Well, that was yesterday, though.
Impressive. Good weekend. Amazing. My Saturday was spent in the Cologne Stadium, actually, watching a soccer game, which was a lot of fun. The first game I've been to where it's like zero knowledge of corona. No one wearing a mask, everybody, like no mandate, no nothing. Very nice kind of to get back to that, to have all the fans back in. Fully because the hooligans, they don't like going into the stadium as much under corona times because they would have to digitally kind of certify where they like who they were, and they like going anonymously for obvious reasons. So it meant the stadium was full and there was fireworks and everything, so it was a good game and the home team won. So my Saturday was better than getting shot on twice.
Mind you, I had a pretty good Saturday. It was just that was kind of not a good part of it.
Agreed. I've never actually gotten shit on by a bird, knock on wood.
Oh, really? Wow.
Never.
No, this is the second and third time it's happened to me.
But as Justin Bieber said, never say never, right?
Yeah. Honestly, it's not that pleasant. The second time a spray hit my sunglass case, and it's still kind of a bit slimy.
Yum. Yeah, because birds shit like diarrhea shit. They don't really have solid shits.
Well, they poo and pee at the same time, right? That's kind of their thing, because they don't drink a lot, so they don't excrete a lot of moisture. But what they excrete with moisture is kind of part of that like slimy excretion, shall we call it?
Yeah. Yeah, disgusting liquid.
Yeah.
Anywho, on that bombshell,
Formula One race.
it was a long Formula One weekend, as we usually slowly the media warms up around the practice sessions, and then Saturdays you have qualifying heading into the race on Sundays. But this weekend was the first sprint weekend of the season, which meant that we had qualifying taking place on Friday already, after one practice session followed up by a sprint race of, I think it was 21 laps in this case or something like that. That then basically the final finish of that race determined the starting grid for the race today. New concept introduced last year. I think the changes they've made around it, which basically were to create more incentive to race by adding more championship points to the full or to the top eight, essentially they receive points, 8, 7, 6, 5, and so further down to 1 point for eighth place. I thought it was really well done, considering that a lot of people always say that Imola, the track is boring, which is where it was being raced. I thought it was a fantastic sprint race, and it was a good setup for the race on Sunday or for today.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with Formula One this weekend. Honestly, I thought it felt busy, it felt energetic, and the fact that there's a few more points to capture, at least to some degree, it seemed to me enabled a lot of participants in the sprint race to kind of go for it a bit more, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure why they went with 8 through to 1 point in descending order, because in the regular race, you have such a huge drop off between first and second place. But honestly, I thought it was well worth it.
I've considered the same fact. It almost seems like it's there, like the sprint race is there to especially incentivize maybe the lower tier teams to make up some ground in those short races through good qualifying and then, you know, going there. For example, Haas, Magnussen put his car on P4 going into the sprint race. So he had a lot to like also still gain potentially from that sprint race. But then I figure they would have done the points differential percentage wise the same proportionately speaking. And that kind of wondered, I wondered that as well. But I think it's worked better than it has in the last season. With the top three otherwise only getting a few points. And I like where it's headed, put it that way. Yeah, because we also had some exciting points in the sprint race. But I guess we want to go over qualifying first.
Well, qualifying was a fucking mess is what qualifying was.
Weather changed significantly over the 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing for qualifying for me was how the track evolution really led to completely unreliable times being set, right? So at some points we had Stroll setting the fastest times, or we had Verstappen go out, set a fastest time. And by the time he re-entered the pit, suddenly, you know, he was sixth or seventh, you know, and it's not just the top two teams kind of taking the top few positions off of each other. It was genuinely changing so much that anyone could end up at any position. And that's what kind of really... yeah, interested me in the qualifying. That, I mean, it went on for way too long. I think it took an hour and a half in the end to kind of get it through. And even I lost interest at some point. But for a good chunk of it, it was really, really interesting because it felt like anything could happen.
It felt very close. And this was the first weekend where the new cars and the new regulations were tested with wet weather. And obviously that changed throughout qualifying, throughout the race today, and kind of throughout the weekend. It was kind of an unpredictable variable, but we had what, 5 red flags during qualifying, which is insane. But on the other hand, I really still enjoyed watching qualifying. It was very tense the whole time. It was very close because, for example, the Mercedes gets so much coverage, and we'll talk about this later again, but they get so much coverage on especially British TV that I always wonder, well, it's interesting to follow them up because you're looking at, they're always on the breakout of Q3 or Q2 on that edge. And they were covering a lot of drivers at risk throughout the qualifying, which I kind of liked. So I gave the TV coverage a good grade for that day, at least.
It didn't feel like during those days we really saw much of the Mercedes at all.
During the qualifying?
During the qualifying. Really?
I disagree. I think they focused a lot on them because they constantly were in the, at least in the first queue, the first session, when they were still around.
Because I disagree. We texted about this earlier. I think, well, let's get into it now then. I think the Mercedes got a huge amount of coverage in the actual race because...
they always do.
Hamilton was where the action was, but before, during the sprint race and during the qualifying, I feel like, you know, we saw nothing of them. It felt like I hadn't seen a silver car all weekend until today.
Funny. I think we watched the same coverage. But for me, it seemed at least during the first part of qualifying, when they were there, they got a lot of coverage because they were always on the edge, and they were always being cheered on. But maybe that's just differing opinion, perspectives on what exactly happened.
Yeah, and
or how we experienced it per se.
Exactly. I mean, I know that what you're getting at is the fact that you think. That Hamilton was getting a disproportionate amount of coverage because of a media bias.
I think I can argue that without Friday.
Yeah.
Over the past 4 races, it's been pretty clear.
But I don't know. Well, I think he got a disproportionate amount of attention just because he, you know, is a 7-time world champion who we were expecting to defend or to attack Verstappen. Because I think if this British media bias, which I do agree is there, if that had really shone through this weekend, we would have seen way too much of Russell and Norris, you know.
True. I feel it Norris would have been more of them. Norris had a very boring race, though, today. He didn't
exactly,
really have
and that's the difference, right? Hamilton had a relatively exciting race, A, because he was really far down, which is exciting for someone of his caliber. So there's a lot to talk about and a lot to get Nico Rosberg to talk about.
That is a whole other topic that we will get into.
And at the same time, he had, you know, like, it felt like a chance every lap to overtake Gasly, and he always failed at it.
Well, again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I just think there is that bias there. But again, to be fair, he is the face of the sport, right?
He's one of the
example in comparison. Like in basketball, LeBron James is the face of the league, and he's been that for nearly 20 years, and he's played on a really, really bad team this season. They've just not got it together and played absolute shit, yet they still have all of their games nationally televised. It doesn't make sense. They're playing bad basketball. If you want to see better sports, like better versions of the game, watch a different game. But no one does, because it's still, that's who people want to see. So it's fair. Yeah. It's fair. Just something I noticed, but not even the biggest takeaway from this weekend. So do you want to take us into details of qualifying or the sprints? Qualifying took longer than it should have.
Qualifying was a mess. And the interesting thing is that Red Bull finished on top. And yeah, it felt like to some degree that the consensus was, okay, no, the Red Bull kind of won qualifying on merit. But then in the end, it didn't feel like the Ferrari got a chance to really set, well, the Ferrari, I say, Leclerc, Sainz having obviously crashed out. Leclerc, in that last bit of qualifying, didn't get a chance to set another contesting time. So I think had that happened, we would have seen Leclerc on pole, which didn't matter, because then during the sprint race, Leclerc quickly overtook Verstappen and then lost that position again on merit during the sprint race, which was probably the most exciting thing. Because let me go out here on a limb. Last year in a sprint race of this caliber, we wouldn't have seen Verstappen be able to attack Leclerc in the last three laps.
First time we've ever seen that in a sprint race, that the lead has changed.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the statistic is that no one has ever started a sprint race. No one who ever started a sprint race and first has won a sprint race.
It was the first time that the lead switched. That's what they were saying on TV, at least along those lines. And that there had been, maybe it was two swaps, because Verstappen got overtaken and then re-overtook. Maybe that kind of thing they were talking about, like a proper battle. But it comes down to the same point, which is that the cars are significantly closer and able to be a lot closer to each other, which is what we saw in the race as well. And in the sprint race, another thing you saw, which I think is a first for a sprint, or hasn't happened very often, is Zhou Guanyu. He went off and DNF'd for that. And unlucky, and it was a bump with, I think, Schumacher. But it shows that they're a bit more on edge, even in that sprint race, which means there's a little bit more incentive, or I that's at least what I interpret into it, which is nice. Yeah. So it's doing the job it should, and it's increasing coverage throughout the weekend.
Yeah, here, I just quickly pulled up the statistics. So, well, the thing I knew, last year in Silverstone, Hamilton started the sprint race in first place, and then Max Verstappen finished in first.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not the first time the lead has changed in a sprint race. And I think what it was is that this was the first time that someone who started the sprint race in first actually finished it in first as well. I feel like that was the statistic. It's not particularly important. We're certainly not a statistics podcast. But, just
if we were, this would not be the right way to present the numbers.
No, absolutely not. In an audio format.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at this graph, no, but then we finished the sprint race, and Verstappen is on pole, as we mentioned. Leclerc second, Perez third. Sainz, I believe, started fourth. He made up quite a bit of ground, or did
he started fourth in the Grand Prix, not in the sprint race.
Yeah, he finished the sprint race. He came up from, I think, ninth or tenth and finished fourth. So he made up a lot of ground during the sprint race, and that was really good because he had crashed out of qualifying. And that was a little, well, iffy, but then again, a lot of people did. kind of the trend of the weekend. And then we have our front row packed there. And then we had Norris and Ricciardo following up on the third row. Then Magnussen and Russell, I'm not sure, or Vettel, whoever.
Vettel started in eighth.
In eighth?
Or in ninth. Magnussen. No, sorry, started in ninth. Magnussen started in eighth, yeah.
Ninth and tenth was Schumacher. Right, he started fairly high up.
Yeah,
whole other thing we'll get to. And then the rest of the field kind of filled in, because most of the excitement happened in the first 10 spots, essentially, at least in the first couple corners of the race. So how about you take us into the start of the race?
Really interesting start of the race. Unlike yesterday, Leclerc actually put up, well, didn't have a great start this time, and the two Red Bulls did. So immediate Red Bull 1-2, and then into the first corner, very wet, very slippery. We just saw a couple of people just get too close to each other, get a bit out of shape, which eventually really led to Ricardo Sainz having an issue. It led to Alonso and Schumacher kind of having a situation. I don't think Schumacher was particularly... I don't think this his incident was caused by Sainz and Ricardo, but he certainly had his own, which then affected Alonso. So a big kind of shuffle of the order, right? Russell had a fantastic start and got way up the order because of this and kind of stayed there all race. So a really interesting first few corners, it followed immediately by a safety car, which was really not, which really didn't do much. Kind of everyone followed suit. Max Verstappen and Perez had a great restart for the safety car. Verstappen obviously timing it in such a way that him and Perez would have the advantage over Norris and Leclerc, who were following. Really good teamwork there. And I feel that Verstappen and Perez specifically are really beginning to vibe with each other, just kind of being able to understand each other and pushing and pulling the best things out of each other.
Yeah. The one thing I texted you during the race was, I think Perez has pretty much locked up a fairly long-term contract coming up here in the summer. I think they're going to keep him. I wouldn't be surprised if he signs a 3-year deal. Like, wow. Him for another 2 to 3 years. Yeah. I really wouldn't be shocked. Because they timed this perfectly with finally filling in that spot for Danny Ric that they've been looking for the last, I don't know how many years. And it's paid off so far, because last season they needed a great second teammate, a number two, just to support, basically. And it was a great year for him to get to know the team, the garage, how everything works, etc. And coming into this completely new set of regulations, everything, I think he's one of the biggest winners, because I mean, he's still the second best on his team, but he's really closed that gap, and he has quite a significant, like, he can match anybody on the track. Perez against Leclerc is as good of a battle, pretty much, as Verstappen Leclerc. Like, there's not much of a difference. He's really edged that. Yeah, he's made it a lot closer than if you compare how Bottas was compared to Hamilton and the rest of the field throughout the last, 5 years. Yeah. So I think he's really like a 1B driver and not a number two driver. And he's really closing that gap. And they're doing a good job. So I think it would be a mistake for Red Bull to immediately look at someone else again, or to potentially bring in Gasly and try that experiment again, etc. Because they're vibing, as you say, and that's an intangible you can't like just buy anywhere.
Especially with Perez, as you mentioned him as being a 1B driver, he's ahead of Verstappen in the championship.
And but like, yeah, I know, yeah,
by not a lot of points. And I do think that Verstappen still has the clear edge and like raw skill. So I do think Verstappen still pulls a bit more out of the car than Perez does, at least so far, whenever Verstappen finishes a race. But the interesting thing for me with those two is just, I've lost my train of thought. Fuck.
Well, you were talking about how they currently Perez is ahead of Verstappen in the standings.
Yes. I think Perez
is the
driver who has...
after this race, he's 5 points behind.
I thought he was 5 points ahead. Okay, fair enough. But what I was trying to say is that I think Perez might be the driver who's proportionately made the biggest jump, at least from the ones who stayed with their teammates. Obviously, I think Bottas made a huge jump, but Bottas didn't stay with the same teammates, so there's not a direct comparison. You could argue Russell, but Russell also for the first time went into a car that is more competitive. So he's made a huge jump, but so is his car, which, mind you, Hamilton should have this car. But I think with Russell and Hamilton, the dynamic is more that Hamilton hasn't really been able to extract the most out of the Merc. Perez is the one who's gotten closest to, his respective Verstappen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, to the point of uncharacteristic 1-2 positions currently in the standings. Okay, until this morning, Perez was still ahead of Verstappen. Mm-hmm. But Russell is 21 points clear of Hamilton after this race.
Yeah, which is a lot.
That's a lot. And for people who don't know the race results of today, Hamilton finished in 13th place. Basically, as Toby mentioned earlier, stuck in a DRS train for 30 laps almost behind Gasly. And honestly, good job to Albon for keeping up that DRS train because he had no one to use DRS on.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
He was putting in insane laps and keeping Gasly away with DRS. It was insane. He was doing a great job. So I don't think the DRS advantage was as high on this track per se as it is in others, as there was only one zone. But Russell widely clear of Hamilton. Russell also coming from a way worse car that had way bigger struggles, which probably took a lot more individual skill to just keep on the track. Now he has something that's, regardless of how uncompetitive Mercedes is, this is still a lot better than the Williams last year. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's like, that's an easier jump to getting better machinery as to getting worse machinery and still trying to shoot way above your weight, punch above your weight. So maybe that's the difference between him and Hamilton right now, because I don't think that one or the other is getting a huge amount of extra like focus right now from the teams.
No,
after this weekend, Hamilton probably will, just to close that gap. But another driver was shouting out, or two actually, Esteban Ocon, especially in comparison to his teammate. That may be due to unluckiness by Alonso having retired a couple races, but still there's a significant gap. He missed out on the points just. And another great driver this year has been Magnussen. This is always
Magnussen, a bit further down. Yeah, Magnussen, honestly.
But Magnussen is making Mick Schumacher look like an F2 driver.
Yeah.
And he did not have a good weekend. Schumacher didn't.
No.
That's really a problem because I'd love to see him further in the seat, but Haas is going to be looking for sponsors everywhere and they won't care about 1&1 and Deutsche Vermögensberatung.
Yeah.
That won't matter to them. So I really hope that Mick turns it around because Magnussen had another good race and he is now P10 in the driver's standings ahead of Daniel Ricciardo.
Who I think had on pure pace, had a lot to give this weekend and just got...
Oh, he made one mistake.
He made one mistake and it was his mistake. Although I think, it's his fault, but it's an easy thing to do. And man, such a shame because I think this was his most... I mean, he did well in Australia, right? And I think he would have been on track for another performance just like that. I think he would have finished ahead of Russell.
Yeah.
And just didn't... Yeah, just one mistake is all it takes. And in the post-race interview, he said, sometimes it's easier to crash out of lap one than to, take damage in lap one and then have to finish the race on some funky strategies, which is what they did. I saw that, Such and a shame.
It's tough because this really feeds into the like more and more ever-growing narrative that that Norris is number one in that team and that he's kind of washed a little bit. And I really hate to see that because I love Daniel Ricciardo and he's one of the most loved drivers there is. But that really sucks. Another driver I'd like to give a shout out to who did an amazing job in the race today, Yuki Tsunoda.
Yeah, Yuki did well.
Also outperforming his teammate, which is also not something you'd necessarily see that much.
Yeah.
And Tsunoda is also ahead of Gasly, only by 4 points, but like still, 10-6. He's outperforming Gasly, which is also incredible.
Yeah.
So he's had a really good season, great turnaround from last season, although it kind of fits in because I think AlphaTauri's competitiveness has dropped a little bit from last year.
I want to say this just because to have a look, let's have a look down the final results, because I think today was a good result for almost every driver that I enjoy seeing have good results. I like seeing both Red Bulls have good results. I like seeing Norris have a good result. I like seeing Russell having a good result. I'm happy for Bottas. I'm happy for, unhappy for Leclerc. He deserved better. But I'm happy to see Tsunoda in the points. I'm happy to see Vettel in the points. I'm happy to see K-Mag in the points. Stroll, take it or leave it. I would have preferred Albon or Gasly.
Yeah, I fully agree. Albon was in my fantasy team. I don't like Stroll.
Yeah, but there's, I'm just happy, It feels like a lot of drivers who deserve to get points and got points today.
Yeah. The only person I'd still like to see in the points was Mick Schumacher. It'll happen eventually. Awesome for Aston. They didn't just get points on the board, the first points of the season. They also got both their drivers in the points, which is, I'm sure, a big confidence boost for the crappy weekend they had last time in Australia. Leclerc, honestly, it was good to see because I was starting to think he was like
just unbeatable
computer. Just just inhumane. And yeah. It was good to see him show like some nerve, maybe, I guess you could call it. And honestly, Russell has been killing it.
Yeah.
He has been, like, mad respect to him. I don't really like his press interviews and it kind of, he gives me the wrong vibe, but like, mad respect is driving. The battle at the end with Bottas the last four laps or so was really, really fun to watch. And I have to say, I was kind of rooting for Bottas, but it was a fun one. It was a fun yeah. one. That battle also showed that the DRS zone did not help that much. Because Bottas would have like, he would have like 6 tenths. He would be behind Russell coming into that long straight and he'd get it down to like maybe 2 tenths and that would be it. And it would like, and then Russell always put in a good lap and edged out a little bit.
Yeah.
So, Norris got a first podium for McLaren, profiting off Leclerc's spin a little bit, which also put Bottas into fifth, which was pretty cool for them. So that's like the most, I think that's his best finish of the year so far. And good job for McLaren. It really seems like McLaren has turned around. And
I really didn't expect that.
No, because in Australia, we were already like, oh, yeah, P6, that's a really, you know, I think, what, P5 and 6 or 6
five
and
6, yeah. And I was thinking that's like, probably that's the best really they'll good. Do this year.
Yeah, that's all they can do. That's the best score they'll get. Yeah. And then
right now, they're, at least today, they were solidly, like, best of the rest, like, uncatchable to Russell. At least Norris was.
Well, yeah, and also what the experts were saying, like, it looks pretty clear that McLaren and Mercedes will battle out for third. Mm. And that's the battle that we're going to kind of focus on. And I wonder what comes after that, to be honest, from a narrative point of view, because Haas and Alpha, maybe. Yep. But where does Alpine fit in? Because they've had some real bad reliability issues.
But they've also had some really good races.
Yeah.
Or they've had some really good performances.
Well, those three teams all seem like they have one reliable point score and one very unreliable point score.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, for Alpine, their unreliable point scorer is Alonso. So, like, I'm pretty not concerned that they're going to be fine.
If they sort his reliability out, he has it in him.
Yeah, but Mick needs to get over the hump to make this a competition. Otherwise, they're going to be in eighth at best.
Yeah.
If Aston kind of stays where they are and doesn't really make many development improvements.
Yeah.
But,
do you want to hear a funny fact?
Go for it.
Mercedes has 77 points right now, which is Bottas's driver number.
Oh, that's funny. It would have been even funnier though if they had 77 after Bottas overtook Russell today. Yeah. That would have made it even more personal.
Yeah. Yeah. But on that, like, Mercedes and McLaren will battle it out for third. We thought last year that McLaren was a shoo-in for third, and then Ferrari really stepped up their game and took it off them, you know. So I don't think anything's assured here.
That's true. The trend right now would say that. And in terms of pace of car and development potential and what the comments have been, that's kind of why those estimates were made. But I mean, it's close. It's close. It's not like you have a massive gap between the top two, but the rest, like third through fifth, are pretty close. Team wise, so it's not like huge gaps. There's only one possible team for third. It's very close, so that could all flip
especially
around.
Not with what 19 races left to go, 18 races left to go, something like that.
And a couple of those have, you know, we don't actually know who's going to have the advantage because they're first time tracks,
dude. Yeah, first time tracks, and I don't know how any of these cars will fare in Monaco because from what we've seen, a lot of cars have issues in. Like entering and exiting slow corners, and Monaco is all that.
Yeah.
You know, like I think the Red Bull will suck around Monaco, for example.
Well, then qualifying will be the most
suck, relatively suck, you know?
But Monaco is always about qualifying anyway. So,
yeah, true.
It's just getting on the front line and keeping it there.
Yeah.
And maybe Red Bull then says, okay, we'll just drive a home a safe P2 and, you know, just take that with.
Think of the championship. Yeah, I had another thing I wanted to talk about, which is kind of like my last major talking point. We saw Leclerc after his spin or after his kind of bump, he pitted, got new tires, got a new nose, and came out in ninth or so. And within, don't let me lie, within like let's call it 8 laps or so, he caught and overtook anything until six or something. Yeah. That was within a few laps. And yeah, the Ferrari's quick and everyone else was on old tires and he was on fresh softs, you know, yada, yada, yada. the fact that he came out so far behind and reeled in like a few good seconds, you know,
anybody
like
he 10, realistically like could
25 seconds, and he overtook all of these guys, gives me hope that maybe what we're going to start seeing is people not pitting only in safe pitting windows towards the end, but banking on the fact that they would be able to overtake. Because these cars, obviously, you know, even last year, yeah, okay, maybe a Hamilton or maybe a Verstappen in their cars could have pulled something like this off easily and shaken it out of their sleeves. But, you know, I think the charge he had in the end there with the damaged car that didn't feel right, just on tire merit and on the fact that he could like really push these tires and overtake people, I thought that was really impressive. And it kind of gives me hope for, to start seeing people believe, especially the top four, because they have such an advantage with their cars, to like go for a bit more unconventional strategies.
I doubt it too, but it's giving me hope. I'd like to think the same. What I would argue against that is the three drivers he overtook were Magnussen, Vettel, and Tsunoda, right? Yeah. Tsunoda had just basically come off a 15-lap super push to get to sixth place, mm-hmm. and to pass Vettel and Magnussen and Stroll, I believe. So he had just, you know, done a lot of work. So his tires weren't just old, but also like from pushing wise, they were even more degraded. Leclerc coming in has the clear car advantage. And I think it also, it shows how good he is as a driver, how close the cars are, but also how competitively far away Ferrari's car is from the midfield in general. Because these were midfield, and like the Aston Martin isn't even considered a midfield car. So I think it's the combining factors of those, but I hope it does lead to more risky kind of pit. Like it maybe adds flexibility to the pit strategies, when to take him. Especially, we see this race for race, what kind of determines how good a race is going to be for a team is the tire degradation. It all comes down to tire degradation in this season. It's so uncalculable.
And getting tires warm. Now when Leclerc came out of the pits and Paris had warmer tires, easy. Like I pretty much any car except for the Red Bull, weirdly, at least to my feeling, I didn't properly keep track of this, but from what I noticed, seem to have trouble on their outlaps more than you know, the few laps after. So even if you have a bad outlap, just having the ability to have your tires fired up will give you such a big advantage that you will get ahead of your rival on track, which you now can, because you can follow a bit better.
And that's, so, you saw that with Perez and Leclerc. Absolutely.
Exactly. And I just feel like it pushes the margins of what teams might be willing to take into account on pit stop strategy a bit closer.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And I'm just really happy about that, you know, because we saw today, like, you know, it was kind of this like trigger of, okay, I'll pit, then Leclerc pits, then Perez pits, then Verstappen pits, because they all get their safety, their safe pit windows. But we still saw some action in there, and we still saw advantages play out against disadvantages. And as soon as that consolidates a bit and people start getting a bit riskier, because risk is where the reward is, that was oddly German. Risk is where the reward is.
There you go.
Then we're going to see some real... Yeah, I just hope that we'll see some, like, you know, ballsy moves.
It'll be closer. But I do think we have to take into account, it's weird seeing right now, at least, a Ferrari that far down the pack. And it's obvious that there's going to be a huge difference. What I think is interesting, and I haven't commented that much on it because I wanted to see how the trend kind of builds out. We have bigger tires this year, or, you know, the front tires are bigger. They're all, I think, 18-inch, if I'm not mistaken. And I thought at the beginning of the season, I wonder how this will affect pit times and pit windows. It affects everybody the same way, but it seems to have created a bigger span of what is considered a good pit stop. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it takes a little bit longer, but at the same time, we see them taking, you know, between 2.3 seconds today, I think was the quickest, and like 3.3. And all of them were considered, yep, solid, good pit stops. Well, that's a second. That wasn't like that last year.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. Last year, it was, if you get under 2.5, it's good. If you get under 2, it's like insanely good. Mm-hmm. And now there's a lot more, you know,
variety.
Variance. It's interesting to see. So yeah. I'm kind of curious. Yeah. Because that also played a role in how Leclerc and Perez, how far they were apart, et cetera.
Exactly. Because had Leclerc not had a 1.4 seconds disadvantage in that pit stop, him not having his tires fired up when coming out the pit might have been entirely different. So yeah, real interesting stuff. Like I'm genuinely really excited for, yeah, I just really like these new regulations. It's providing really fun racing and making the strategy much more interesting in my mind.
Absolutely. Also, another thing to the tire warm-up, what was really interesting to see, so we actually just skimmed over this real quick. At the start, Sainz crashed out, or got crashed out, because Ricardo made a little error, as we had mentioned. He hit Sainz, and that was a big consequence. Leclerc was on his own, having given up the second place, basically chasing down the Red Bulls on his own without support for the rest of the race. But we saw on the start, both Red Bulls got great starts. Both Ferraris got shit starts. And we can put that down to driver error. However, we've seen in the past few races that Alfa Romeo has had that same issue. That both drivers, for example, have had a shit start. Yeah, and that was due to an issue on the car and not to the drivers, is my point.
Yeah.
So just saying it could be down to something on the car. And it seemed like both of them didn't have optimally warmed up tires, basically after the formation lap compared to the Red Bulls. On top of that, may have not gotten the best start, which I think is interesting.
I think it's much more about the formation lap, because the problem the Alfa Romeos had were down to their clutch, which was down to them having their gearbox, and specifically Alfa Romeo didn't purchase Ferrari's gearbox this season. So I don't think that's a problem that's going to move across to Ferrari, but it is an interesting thought, right? You can get it really wrong in with such simple things. And we saw it yesterday with Verstappen having a shit start for whatever reason, you know, maybe it was also tire warm up, but Christian Horner also came out today and said, yeah, it's all about how we work the tires. Extremely important.
The tire aspect of Formula One seems to be a lot more, or even more important this year, because there's just so many more things that can go wrong with it.
Yeah. But in a different way, because last year it was, okay, who can save their tires the most? Now it's, okay, who can keep their tires in an active window for the longest, which is really interesting. Because last year was just, well, you get one attack and then it's shit. Then you're done after, essentially. And this year it's, okay, you get as many attacks as you want as long as you keep the tire working.
Yeah, yeah. It's
really fun.
It bodes for exciting racing. And, well, the way the race finished today, Verstappen won, Perez got second, Norris third, as we mentioned. Then Russell, Bottas, Leclerc, Tsunoda, Vettel, Magnussen, and Stroll rounding out the top 10. Albon, Gasly, Hamilton, Ocon, Zhou, Guanyu, Latifi, Schumacher, and Ricciardo rounded out the non-point sections. And then we had Alonso and Sainz not finishing. Fun fact about Alonso, it's the second time that their side pod has failed in, I think, a race, actually. Or I think the first time it may have been a qualifying session. But either way, again, side pod has blown off. This time it was not due to its own car, but because it got bumped or dented by Mick Schumacher fairly early. And then Alonso just dropped down the field and had to retire. Sadly, sucked, but they did it to save the engine, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I mean, without an intact side pod, you're just risking so many cooling issues, you know? That's what they're there for.
Absolutely.
Also, I don't know, maybe it would have affected the crash safety. So, yeah.
Well, and then, I mean, this is really nice because we have through this huge weekend where Red Bull got quite a few points on Ferrari as a team in general, because there's also the sprint race. Verstappen gained the maximum possible points. He responded with, like, last race, Leclerc had a grand slam, which is a podium or pole position, leading every lap, fastest lap, and winning the race, obviously. And Max did that too, but I think even more impressively, he added the sprint race title to it, because, you know, that's another extra race. Mm-hmm. So he had the qualifying first, the sprint first, the race first, the fastest lap, he led every lap of the race too this today, and just a great weekend to bounce back for Red Bull to make it close in the championship. So I think we're on now.
I think Red Bull
just got the corner.
Red Bull only missed one reasonable point this weekend, which is that Perez finished the sprint qualifying in third and not in second. And that's a 1 point difference. And had he finished in second, they would have gotten every available point, or the highest available points to them this weekend.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
So good haul of points for them this weekend. Yeah. Good for me in fantasy, because that's my team. So I'm excited.
I haven't checked the fantasy in a while, actually.
I meant to make Verstappen my mega driver this weekend because you're only supposed to do it for sprint weekends because it gets you more double points.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot.
Ah, well.
Q1 had started.
I don't think I did too well this week because I had, I have Haas as my team. So that didn't do too well. And I had Gasly as my turbo driver. My second team is doing so much better than my first team in every week. It's insane.
Oh, I have Ferrari as my team. That sucks. And Verstappen as a driver.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's funny. I should enter my second team into stuff.
Dude, my second team is doing so much better, too.
Yeah.
I got 260 points this weekend. 99 by Red Bull, 60 by Leclerc, 43 from Norris, 34 from Bottas. Oh, man. Yeah, that one's at 809 points already. But the one that we are competing with, I have 549 points in total. Yeah. Schumacher got -3. Great job, man. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Shit happens.
Yeah, he'll get there.
He'll get there eventually.
Next season. Maybe he'll score a point this season. That'd be nice.
Well, the one of the two drivers that's considered to most definitely be in Formula One, or if the two names that people would consider as new drivers next year would be Oscar Piastri, obviously, coming in, and Theo Pourchaire from Formula 2. And he just won at Imola this weekend as well. Like, last lap overtake, really close final, very, very good win. So, he's performing well. So there's definitely up-and-coming talent waiting to get in. Well, there always is, too. So,
yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't think this is his last. I mean, he's got to start performing, right? Otherwise, this might be his last season in Formula 1. But I think he has a lot of, A, goodwill, and B, you know, he did win the Formula 2. He did outpace the car last year every now and again. So I'm not concerned, but I think he needs to start giving us something to believe in at some point.
Yeah, it's been long enough now. But this Imola looked better for them than it should have at the beginning in qualifying because of the weather. They were better in the wet. And I think that kind of created a bit of an illusion as to how good they were this weekend in terms of like pace and stuff. Because every time the sprint race started, Magnussen put it in P4. That was more luck than anything else. Or he did a good job. Let's, you know, keep it at that. But he dropped down to P8, and that's kind of where he's been floating, and that's cool. But I hope there'll be a track that really comes together for them where they're able to, you know, potentially both score points, both get very high points. I don't know. Where maybe they can even get a podium. I see that happening this season for them, honestly. But I think it's more likely to happen at the beginning of the season, at the end of the season, because they're probably going to lose the development race to the bigger teams.
Interesting. I think they have quite a bit of stuff up their sleeve in the development race. I don't know if they'll have the money to produce it.
Well, they're budgeted, right? So that's what's good.
Yeah.
That's what's kind of, I think that's really interesting too. Another point of that's really impacted decision making on whether to ship new parts or whatever to do. But people have really been talking a lot about how the budget affects their decision-making, which I think is very, very interesting. So I think that does influence the competition as well. And again, leads to the fact that the cars are able to follow closer. I think that does have a big impact on it because Mercedes can do whatever they want. They can throw any part in the book at it 7-8 times, but Haas can only afford it twice.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't be shocked if we see more often that, like, for example, if Latifi crashes again in qualifying, like a pretty bad one, that they just don't race him, like Haas did with Schumacher, just because everybody's constrained with the same budget now, and that's expensive. You know, it just costs you a few million dollars. Bam. Yeah. And is that really what you want to do? On top of that, you're going to be facing penalties later on if you have to replace engines, etc. So there's, you know, a lot of thought that goes into it. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm basing this just on a comment that Gunter Steiner made when the zero pod concept was kind of revealed new. And yeah, we thought about that, but we didn't think the development path for it was there. And we didn't think it had that many places to go. So I figured, okay, they probably, if any team has had time to really think where they want to go with their concept, it's has.
That's true. That's true. They've had the most time to consider the most development options.
Yeah.
So that hopefully that also means they made the best and most critical decisions correctly. So we'll see. Maybe they are able to outsmart the bigger teams.
It'd be
But yeah,
nice.
this race has really been a nice foreshadowing of hopefully what the rest of the season is all
Yeah,
about. Very
really fun race.
close. I mean, at the end of 63 laps, which 63 laps is longer than a lot of other races we see just from a lap count. But I would have happily liked that to say 120 laps because every lap was entertaining. It didn't stop being entertaining. And I would love to see that continue. Just really enjoying every lap because there's races where you spend 20 laps just kind of bored. Nothing's
Yeah, like
happening.
Melbourne.
Yeah, but okay, I was asleep for that one because it was time-wise not possible this year to watch. But most races seem to be very close right now, or a lot closer than in the past,
A
and
lot
that's
closer than usual, yeah.
nice to see. Very entertaining. Anyway, that's most of my emotional reaction. I can't wait to see Mick score points, and I'm loving Yuki. That's kind of my
Yeah.
takeaway.
Yeah, I agree. I agree fully. I enjoy Yuki. I'd love to see Mick perform to the expectations. What's the next race? Miami? He
Yep.
generally doesn't fare too well on tracks he hasn't been on, I guess. So I wouldn't expect anything there. I wouldn't expect anything in Monaco either. Where did he have his best finish last year? A Hungaroring, but that was because everyone else crashed out.
Well, that
Yeah, I'm
could happen
struggling to
again.
come up with like what race he would really excel in. But the Haas seems to certainly
It's a good car, period.
it's a good car and it does well on tracks where the Ferrari does well. Where did the Haas do particularly? Well, the Haas done fairly all right in every track so far. I
Well,
guess they don't like the
we have
slow
Barcelona
corner
after
exit so
Miami.
much.
We have Barcelona between Miami and Monaco.
All right. Yeah, that might be
So
it.
all teams have a lot of testing experience there. That's where another huge chunk of improvements are going to be brought to because cars, like most teams, know the track and have spent a lot of time like preseason testing there.
Do you want to
So
know the funny thing though? Do you want to know who will have a disadvantage in Barcelona?
you think Haas will?
No, Mercedes, because they didn't bring their full concept to Barcelona.
No, they changed their pods later, right?
Exactly.
They did. Yeah, that's
So
funny.
they don't have that benchmark.
Well, I wasn't counting them into any kind of area anyway. Russell lucks into a top five finish and Hamilton doesn't finish. That's kind of how it's been going nowadays.
Yeah, fair enough.
We have Azerbaijan after Monaco, but that's also,
Red Bull domination.
yeah, but I'm tough from a Haas perspective. That would probably be tough as well. Then we have Canada, which is again a new track, then Silverstone,
No,
then
Canada's
Austria.
not a new track.
For Mick, it is.
Is it for Mick? Has he not raced there
They
in
haven't.
F2?
Oh, that's what you mean. Well, he hasn't in F1. That's what I was trying to
Fair.
say. And I don't think Canada's taken play. I think they've scratched it the last 2 years, like
Yeah,
Australia, because
for
of
sure.
COVID. And then we have, what do we have then? Austria, France, Hungary, Belgium, Netherlands, Italy, Singapore, Japan. With, yeah, there's a lot of races left, I'm realizing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hopefully there's a, Bottas goes bowling type race and Mick can profit off that. But let's get to a funny little part of how on the broadcast, kind of talk about the broadcast a little bit
Yeah, go
because
on.
there's a couple comments I want to make about that. A, I don't know if you have specific comments on how they showed the race in general and who they showed. We talked about Hamilton at the beginning. In general, it was quite exciting though today. They seem to focus mostly on the right points, but sometimes I got a bit bored of seeing Hamilton fail to pass Gasly and them saying the same thing for 20 laps in a row. I think 8 laps in a row, they just covered that. And it was a bit of a, it was boring at some point, but I guess you want to focus on that just in case it happens. So I wasn't going to give them bad grades for that. But we had a guest expert on the show that was kind of giving interviews mid-race and also in the post show. That was one Nico Rosberg, who really enjoyed Mercedes' bad weekend, I think. He was always gleeful and smiling, especially that Russell was so much higher than Hamilton. And this is where I think what was funny is because the Sky Sports reporters, they're all British, so they're trying to cut Lewis a lot of slack, right? Like, oh, the car's bad. Toto said it. Toto said the car was bad and it's their fault. Nico, what do you think? You know, it's probably tough seeing your team do that poorly this weekend. And they kind of just washed over Russell, which I thought was interesting because he's also British. But Hamilton's so beloved. And Nico went, yeah, I think it was smart of Toto from a mental standpoint to keep Lewis, like, you know, not let him go over the edge to acknowledge his stuff. But let's not forget, Russell got P4. Lewis didn't drive well today and didn't do a good job. And just, like, absolutely let him have it. And I think that was his happiest moment since winning the championship.
Yeah, it was really interesting for him. All of his commentary. I actually like him when he's in the pundit role. I think he does quite a... he gives quite a nice insight that you wouldn't get otherwise. Him and Paul Di Resta this weekend gave some really interesting insights. Anyways, yeah, it was interesting, or it was fun to hear him kind of go, yeah, that'll sting. Oh yeah, he will not be feeling well right now. It's like, yeah, you know, you're not saying that you're happy about it, but you're kind of insinuating that you kind of go, yeah, I know. Oh, wow. He'll feel like absolute hell. How he can look in the mirror after that.
Also, while he was trying to pass Gasly, he would just, like, bring in small comments like, yeah, well, you know, to pass a car, you have to go around it and be quicker. And Hamilton just isn't able to do that. Must be frustrating. I love those kind of comments. So that added an extra, like, level of pettiness and spice to F1 that I really love on as many occasions as possible. And I'm sure that'll come back in Drive to Survive. Any other broadcasting points that you enjoyed?
I did enjoy Paul Di Resta going after Leclerc crashed. He kept going like, oh, I can't, in his wonderful accent, which I'm not going to try to imitate, but he kept going like, yeah, I can't believe they put him on softs. I can't believe they wanted to go for that one point, you know, just think of the championship. And honestly, yeah, now they have it, you know. I thought that was fantastic, you know, and the fact that he wouldn't understand, or he refused to understand or to agree with that reasoning was just wonderful. I love seeing that, because you could tell the other broadcasters like, yeah, no, but you want to go for that point, right? And he's like, no, you wouldn't want to.
Well, to be fair, Leclerc has showed in the past, in last race, he showed that he likes getting as many points as he can. And it wasn't really a risky move to put him on softs.
No, like, no, but it was a risk to kind of go push hard in a slightly wet situation. It was a risk, right?
And a driver error. It was not a team misjudgment. It was nothing. They gave him straight up advice. The they said, that, we would not do this, but if you really want to go for it, he talked them into it. And he made a stupid mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
And Rosberg actually put it really well, because like, I guess beforehand, someone else on the team radio had said there's a weird wet spot going into that corner. And that's why Leclerc tried to take more of the curb. And then it just, you know, bounced and he lost control, wasn't able to catch it anymore and spun. Hitting the wall, being super fucking lucky, by the way, to be able to continue. Everybody just washes over that. And that's why this isn't that bad for him this weekend. Because it's only 7 points that he lost to Max.
Yeah, had he fully crashed out, that would have been a disaster.
Exactly. Both Ferraris out. I mean, that would have been crazy. And he made a simple error in a corner, a driver mistake, and showed nerves.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can blame the team or anything. It's his mistake. And he acknowledged that. And I think he's fine. In the interview afterwards, he seemed like, yeah, mistake. It happens. It's a long season. These are bound to come up, but they can't be many. And this was, you know, the last one or something like that.
Yeah. So he's come a long way from I am stupid kind of move.
Yeah. I think, well, he cussed a lot, but who doesn't after something like that?
Last year in Imola, Tsunoda rained down swear words.
Well, yeah. But fun fact, Tsunoda went right out where Leclerc ended up hitting the wall and continuing. And it was like same, really similar thing. So very, very lucky that Leclerc was able to continue. Good for him. Rosberg also criticized the fact that they immediately went into the pits. and said that he should continue driving at least for another lap just to test it. Which is
what Verstappen and Norris were saying in the breakout room after, or whatever it's called.
Which is the next, the cool down room, which is the next point I wanted to bring up. I really enjoy, I hadn't seen that in any of the other races so far this season, but we really were able to listen in on the full conversation of the podium drivers. And like watching the highlights and exchanging. And what I loved was Max Verstappen's like facial reaction to finding out that Leclerc spun, like crashed, pitted, and still finished sixth. Yeah. And he's like, he got sixth? And it's just a face of amazement.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a really interesting insight. So I hope they continue doing that.
I really hope so too.
If the FIA is listening to this, please do that more often. And we'd appreciate it.
Stefano Domenicali, if you're listening to this, you know, just kind of
by chance. I think we've given him a shout out in Step One episodes. Anywho.
All right. I'm going to try to break out of my uni now.
That's a good idea.
That's a good idea. That's 8:30.
We were cleaning out my attic today from my my mom's place, and I found a fully functional Carrera Bond. Fully functional Carrera track with a loop the loop and everything. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I'm going to spend my evening doing.
Excellent choice.
Anywho, on that bombshell, thank you all so much for tuning in, and we will be back next week.
Have a
wonderful week, and we hope you enjoy these emotional race reactions as the show henceforth be titled.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.